Okay, disciplines of integrity. You can turn to Matthew chapter 5 if you want to. You probably can almost memorize this scripture, or at least you know what it is. If I just say the word light, you say, okay, that is where it's at. Chapter 5, we're going to start at verses 14 through 16. But I'll tell you a story first. And the story is about my grandfather. As a boy, I consider growing up in Minnesota till I was about 16 years old. You've heard some of them stories in the past. And then we moved to Wisconsin. My younger brother is 10 years younger than me, so he would say, I grew up in Wisconsin. I say, I grew up in Minnesota. But coming into Minnesota, I worked with my grandpa in his shop there for a while. My mom always said when I came home, she said, I can tell you were working with grandpa because he was more laid back. I worked for an uncle. He was full speed ahead all day. And she said, you could just tell. So I worked in that shop. And then my younger brother, one of my younger brothers worked in there, and he told this story. He said, my grandfather came back from shopping uptown, and he said, he's just getting out of the car. And he says, oh, Tim was my brother's name. He said, I didn't pay for this. He said, I'm going back uptown. You can come along with me if you want to. So they went back uptown and he went in and paid for it, came back out again. And I could just envision everybody knowing everybody in a little town like that, that they got to talking in there, and he walked out. Come back out to the car and he said to my brother, he said, I ain't selling my soul to the devil for 11 bucks. You see what that said to, we'll start in the store, the clerk, all the people who saw what happened, my brother when he came out, all that he told the story to, and now in Bible school, all those people that know that. And that's really how it happens. That's how people are watching us. They're seeing that discipline of doing that. There are times, I don't know if it ever happened to you, but there are times that somebody will mischarge me. In other words, they'll miss something or whatever. Now, if it's too much, we're quick to go to them and say, hey, you charged me too much. But how about when they miss something? That was their fault, right? Wasn't always their fault. I went out once with a part and I'm unloading and I looked on the bottom and I said, uh-oh, that didn't go across the cash register. Well, I had to go back in again. Kind of fun doing that because they're not quite sure how to handle that. So if you get that opportunity, well, I know you would take it up any. Well, if you're in Matthew chapter 5 here, let's look at these three verses or so. Ye are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick, and it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works, and maybe we could put in, they can see your discipline of integrity. And glorify who? Your Father, not you, your Father, which is in heaven. I like that. So you think about what my grandfather did. And according to this, he was like a light set on a hill. Now, something I noticed as I was reading over this again today, and I said, well, it's talking about being the light of the world, but it says, a city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. I always thought my one light up there on the hill, if you will, but it's saying, and I thought, well, that'd be interesting to look into that a little more. So maybe sometime challenge you with that idea. Why does it say a city? And we understand that. But if all of us are on a hill with lights, it glows brighter than one person. On your handouts there, it's outlined on the one side, the main points that I'd like to share with you. I always like to say this when I get started. The first one and the second points are going to take the longest, and the last one will be the shortest, because most of you would start thinking, oh, he had to hurry up at the end. No, there are things I want us to get in the first couple, especially. The last one, really, you could almost tell me the story, so we don't have to spend a whole lot of time there. I just want to remind us of it. So we're thinking about understanding discipline for the first main point here. And as I looked up this word discipline, I found it rather interesting to discipline ourselves. It's the ability to keep working at something that is difficult. That takes discipline. And is integrity difficult? Well, I trust that by all of our ages that are here, it's not. But how about as a child learning to be integrous? How did that go? Need any reminders? Most of us need a little help there when we're younger, but to work at something that's difficult. But the thing that came through to me was the idea of training ourselves, and that is in the word discipline, of training ourselves to be a person of integrity, that it takes work. How long does it take to break trust with someone? I can tell you how long it takes. It takes about that long. Some wrong words come out of your mouth, and just like that, trust has been broken, or whatever it might be, the relationship is broken. It's happened to me. I'm sure it's happened to most of us one time or another. So it's the process by which we learn a way of living. Then integrity, the quality of being honest. And really, as you think about it, it kind of all encompasses a lot of what we're going to look at, but it's also strong moral principles. Now, also on your sheet are some verses there that I'd like to go over. Now, if I go into another version, I don't know if you get frustrated as I do, but I don't like when somebody's up front reading another version and I only have the King James or whatever, can't follow. So I put them on the sheet so we can follow together there. And these verses refer to the moral and ethical uprightness, honesty, sincerity. So the emphasis really is on wholeheartedness, and it's on consistency in belief and action. Not one time you do right, and the next time maybe, and the next time not at all. It's a consistent thing you do throughout life. Let's just look at these verses. Proverbs 10:9 there says, "The man of integrity walks securely, but he who takes crooked paths will be found out. The integrity of the upright guides them, but the unfaithful are destroyed by their duplicity." And we'll look at that word in a little bit. "The righteousness of the upright delivers them, but the unfaithful are trapped by evil desires." Now, here's why I pulled them out of the New International Version. There's something I want you to notice that goes down through those different verses. First of all, we could say there's action there. Things are happening. So we look at the first one there. It says, the upright person or the integrous person, as we're thinking about tonight, walks securely. And in our devotions there in the last verse, it stood out to me. It didn't say on level ground, but he's walking on ground where he doesn't stumble along. Well, that fits right in. If we're integrous, we won't be stumbling along. We'll be able to have a consistent lifestyle and walk as we should. So he walks securely. I go in the next verse, he guides them. And I go in the next verse, and it says he delivers them. So they walk securely, he guides them, he delivers them. But we look at the ungodly, the unfaithful. They are found out, they are destroyed, they are trapped. That's very true. I think that sums up some of the basics of what we want to think about tonight, right there in those three verses. However, we can't go on. Well, let's notice, first of all, it talked about evil desires at the end of Proverbs 11, 6. The idea is there that they covet, they lust, and really it's all about me. And I think that's in your notes there as well. And what I picked up somewhere, and I'm not sure who said it because no name was put there, but it says, you can easily judge the character of a man by how he treats those who can do nothing for him. If you don't know the character of somebody, just watch them for a while and see how they treat those who they might feel are under them or can't do anything for them. So, and that certainly would not be an integrous person. The idea is sort of as I jotted in the notes there, if you can't do anything for me, then forget it. It's all about me, don't you see? I was going to say, how many of you have seen people like that or worked with people like that, but I won't do that to you, but I think a lot of us have. We've seen it. It's unfortunate. But what I wanted to get at here was Job chapter 2, verse 3 there. You also have that. A great example of integrity. The Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job? that there is none like unto him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil, and still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause. Wow is kind of a cheap word, but what can we say for a man to be able to do that? Retain their integrity. Well, the disciplines of integrity are built one decision, one choice, one day at a time. And so that's why you have that pyramid, and I guess that's on the opposite side. And that pyramid there is, we're going to work our way up that pyramid. And what we are striving for is to be a person of integrity, of character, whatever you want to call it. The topic is integrity, so we'll think of it as such. But we'll start at the bottom, and you can make notes all around it if you want to. I'll tell you what you might want to put in the pyramid as we work our way up through. The first one, we start at the very bottom of our pyramid, triangle, whatever you want to call it. Core biblical beliefs. Core biblical beliefs. And that's really where it all starts. And for a lot of us, it started in our homes. For many of us, it started there, is where we were starting to build core biblical beliefs. And so what biblical principles have shaped your life? What happened to shape that all for you? You might say, well, I knew there were the Ten Commandments, but there's a higher law in the New Testament, right? And that is love. Love the Lord God with all your heart and soul and man as well. So, is there integrity in your life versus indifference? Oh, well, it really doesn't matter. Is there faithfulness instead of duplicity? And there's that word that I said I would explain a little bit. Taking advantage of people behind their backs, usually. Duplicity. You're such a nice guy to their face, but just let them turn around. That guy, he, and honesty instead of deception. Those people, the saying does not match the doing. And just hang on to that thought. We're going to be getting there in the next point or so. After a while, commitment versus compromise. Abraham Lincoln said, your core values are the deeply held beliefs that authentically describe your soul. Okay, and I went through that pretty fast. I'm going to say it again. Your core values are the deeply held beliefs that authentically describe your soul, who you really are. Spiritual disciplines are biblical practices that a believer does to grow spiritually in Christ. And when we discipline ourselves, four things happen. And I don't like to make lists and say four things happen, because we could probably put some more in. But these are some main things I see. We build our relationship with Christ. Our character grows. We bear more fruit. Our interpersonal relationships thrive. Relationship with Christ, our character, more fruit, interpersonal relationships. And I believe that we as God's people should bear fruit like our fruit trees bore this year. I don't know how many of you grow fruit or what it was like down this way, but all of our fruit just went all out. And a cherry tree that we hardly ever got anything off of that had overgrown was fully loaded, and how am I going to tackle a tree like that? And so what I started doing, I said it needs a haircut anyway, in other words, trim back. So I started cutting the tops off and taking those branches over and laying them on a table, and that's where they picked cherries over in the table until we got to the main tree. It was just loaded. I had a plum tree out back that would not do anything, and I told my wife, I threatened, I said, that's coming out of the orchard if it doesn't start producing. Couple of years later, I gave it a couple more years, and I said, that's it. I'm going to build the grandchildren a treehouse on top of here. So I cut all the branches off nice and level, put a treehouse on top of there. We got the best plums off of that tree this year. It started pushing branches, and I don't know if that's what it needed, but I was thinking, if that would be Christian, just putting out the fruit. I mean, branches broke on our pear trees. And I said, well, they need trim too. But just to see them making that spiritual application. Okay, let's go back to our triangle again. The next one up, the next space, we put in godly vision. Number two is godly vision. Have you stopped to think of what does God want to do with your life? Now you may say, okay, there's quite a few of us here that are getting up in age. I'll include myself in that. You're talking about me? Yeah, I'm talking about me and you as well, because I got to this stage in my life. I just told Brother Paul, I said, I'm not running excavators anymore. I quit that this spring. And you get to that point and you just kind of, okay, now what? So what's my vision from here on? So I think that we come up to those things at different stages and ages, and we, okay, what's next? If this isn't to be, what's next? So what is the vision? So what am I? And so at this point, I think of what are my goals and what do I like to do? Because I don't think God's going to make you do something you don't like to do. He gave you gifts and talents for a reason. So is there some way we can connect these things? And sometimes it takes discipline to get it done, get into it, do it. Then we think about the visions. We move on to number three, next one up, and I put in convictions there. Do I have strong enough convictions to stand where I should? And don't let my vision take me off, or what I'd like to do take me off, what God wants me to do take me off in the wrong direction. So am I disciplined enough to set and maintain my life goals, my vision, what God would have for me, my convictions? Can I hang on to them? See, we're building our way up here to being an integrous person, a person of character. And then the courage that kind of goes along with it in number four, next one up is courage. Am I disciplined enough to pay whatever price to maintain these first three? And then to reach number five, which is character, discipline of integrity. Or in other words, what we're looking at is Christ likeness. So we have to stop and ask ourselves, have I allowed God to train me so that I would have strong moral principles? Am I really where I should be? You know, where you're in business, you really have to watch. I've been there enough years. You have to really watch. How about, might be later on here, I'm not sure, but how about when you buy or somebody buys from you an automobile? I wonder how many of you were walking in the notary or interacting with the other person and they say, so what are we going to say the price is? That's a no-brainer. It's what it's. In fact, I told one person, I said, well, I said, if you can't cover it, I can. No, that's all right. You backed away from it. And I would have. Rather than say it's 1,000 when it's 5,000 or whatever. And that stops them for sure. Anyway, let's go to the second point. The undisciplined life lacks integrity. You can turn to Genesis 29. We're going to jump there, jump in there at verse 18. Again, it's a familiar story, but I read over this again and I got stumped at the one part and said, all right, we're going to keep working at this till I get it figured out. So I did. And we're jumping in here kind of not in the middle of a story, but not right at the beginning. And I think you know what it is. What does no discipline and integrity look like? And we're going to ask ourselves, do I like working with somebody like that? Would I like working with me? Let's put it that way. If I was somebody else, would I like working with me? Would I like working around me? Jumping into verse 18, says Jacob loved Rachel. Remember earlier they met. Now he goes back to her house and said, I will serve thee 7 years for Rachel, thy younger daughter. And Laban said, it is better that I give her to thee than that I should give her to another man. Abide with me. Jacob served 7 years for Rachel. And they seemed unto him but a few days for the love he had to her. And so what he's saying there is the love shortened the years. Well, for me, it was like, okay, this is day 21, 4 hours, 13 minutes, you know, New York. But I think what he's saying is that he didn't mind at all working 7 years he could get Rachel. And Jacob said unto Laban, give me my wife, in verse 21, for my days are fulfilled, that I may go in unto her. And Laban gathered together all the men of the place and made a feast. So he's really doing it up big time. And it came to pass in the evening that he took Leah, his daughter, and brought her to him. And he went in unto her. And Laban gave unto his daughter Leah Zilpha, his maid, for an handmaid. And it came to pass that in the morning, behold, it was Leah. And he said to Laban, what is this thou hast done unto me? Did not I serve with thee for Rachel? Wherefore then hast thou beguiled me? In other words, what I could hear him saying, Laban, you're not an integrous man. You tricked me. You betrayed me. Why? Why'd you do this? Oh, well, you see, there is a rule in our land. Let's go on to verse 26 here. Laban said, it can't be done in our country to give the younger before the firstborn. Well, now, isn't that interesting? Wasn't that handy not to tell him till now? Really? Was this his plan all along? Free labor for another 7 years? I don't want to put too much on Laban, but we're going to see Laban's character here right shortly. And I don't think it's going too far to assume that he's thinking more increase, because he saw what was happening with his cattle. And as I think about what Laban is saying here, and it all sounds so good, you know, there's nobody that I'd rather give my daughter to than you. Let's go ahead. What should we do? 7 years. Okay, that sounds good. Yeah, all the speech. And I think about integrity in speech, and how is our speech? Are we completely truthful? And when we don't speak up sometimes. And something that came to me as I was looking at this, and I understood that for years, but it's, people say, well, I just told a little white lie. Heard that, a little white lie? Does God have a size and a color on lying? No. There isn't. If it's a lie, it's a lie. There's no size, no color. But something that bothers me just as much is if you stretch a story to make it more interesting, a true story, something that happened. And I was sitting at a service station, fueling up, and it comes down into circle. And if you want to be entertained, especially when that first opened, just spend some time there at that service station watching people. But I heard a crash behind me, and I quick turned around just in time to see some vehicles flying, some SUVs and so forth. And now I could take that story and make it very interesting for you. But you see, I didn't even see everything that happened. But I could assume a lot of things, and I could hold your interest for a while. That's lying. I've seen Christians that can cut loose with their mouth. They call themselves Christians. Foul mouths. Gossip also God hates. Well, I was just thinking about it, integrity in speech. Let's move on here. He says in verse 27, fulfill her week, and I'll give thee also the service that thou serve with me yet another 7 years. So Jacob fulfills those years. In verse 30, says he fulfills them. We go to Genesis 30. And we jump in here at verses 25 to 43. Again, skipping a bunch of story, but something we need to pick up here to get to our main point of looking at this. It came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph, that Jacob said unto Laban, send me away that I may go into my own place, to my country. Give me my wives, my children, for whom I have served thee. And let me go, for thou knowest my service, which I have done thee. And Laban said unto him, I pray thee, if I have found favor in thine eyes, tarry, for I have learned by experience that the Lord hath blessed me for thy sake. And he said, appoint me thy wages, and I will give it. I stopped right there when I was rereading this story. And the first thing that came to my mind was, here we go again. And he actually went ahead and did it. He already should have been picking up the character of Laban. I bring this whole story out because I have a concern of Christian businessmen and how they are running their businesses sometimes. I certainly am not putting all Christian businessmen in one box. Understand that. But are they all integrous? I see some things that I am not impressed with when they come fairly close to home for me. So here we go again. Laban is against Jacob, really. But, well, let's move on. Jacob says, verse 32, latter part of that verse, and I titled this, he says, this is what my pay will be. All the brown cattle among the sheep, okay? So the brown sheep. And the spotted and speckled among the goats. So what I gather is they're of lesser value on of the pure ones, the white ones. That's what I get. And I realize we have more farmers sitting here than probably in the biggest church that I have talked to, and as far as having farmers. So some of these things I'm going to talk about, you can tell me if I got them right or not. But I was very intrigued by what he did, what Jacob did here. Laban said, let it be according to your word. In other words, that sounds like a good plan to me. Let's go for it. That's what some businessmen would say. And they might lead you on somebody in their business that, yeah, let's go for it. When really they have a plan behind the plan. So notice what Laban does. And this is what I struggled with. It says in verse 35, and he removed that day the he-goats that were ring-streaked and spotted, and all the she-goats that were speckled and spotted, and everyone that had some white on it, in it, and all the brown among the sheep, and gave them into the hand of his sons. And I said, whoa, Laban did this. I was always thinking Jacob did this. No, Laban did. Because when we go on here, we find out that Jacob took the rest of the flocks in verse 36. What Laban did was, he separated all of those that were speckled brown, whatever it might be. He separated them out and took them 3 days' journey away. Now, we don't have to be too bright to figure out that 3 days' journey away, there's a very slim chance that there's going to be an intermixing of breeding here, right? So he has tricked Jacob. Really? So we go on here and we find out that Jacob has implemented a plan. Jacob took him, in verse 37, rods of green poplar and of the hazel and chestnut tree, and pilled white streaks in them, and made the white appear which was in the rods. And he set the rods which he had pilled before the flocks in the gutters, in the watering troughs, when the flocks came to drink, that they should conceive when they came to drink. And the flocks conceived before the rods and brought forth cattle, ring-streaked, speckled, and spotted. Now, before I go on to explain a little bit what happened here, how many of you farmers have gotten branches and you've trimmed them off until the inside of the branches is opening up and put them around the watering troughs? Is that a common practice? Not practiced at all, right? I'm not a farmer. I grew up, we had a farm. Not so half farm there in Minnesota, but anyway, I never saw that happen. Now, this is interesting. So I laid the Bible aside and I checked this out. And they said, well, actually, scientists have said it is possible. And I said, well, I didn't need that proof to know that if that's what happened. God said it happens in his word, whatever, it happened. What was happening is whenever the stronger cattle came in, he would put that. Ring Street, or you know, it was that type of thing was going on, that it was changing. So whatever it was, he says, you changed my wages 10 times in 6 years. Or unless he was including the daughters, I don't know. Be that as it may, that's a lot of times in even 20 years. Integrity and commitments. Are you reliable? If you tell somebody you will do something, you get it done. There's a lot of things we get done because my wife reminds me. But I try to do better now. I have a phone that I can jot it down in there right away and can look at it myself. Oh, by myself. I can check. Oh, that's I got it. Because I believe it's very important if we say we'll do something to do it. If we're going to be there, we're there. And people learn that real quick, whether you're not, you're reliable. Laban didn't keep his promises. Didn't do as he said he would. And that is called deception. A person who keeps promises show that they stand by their morals and ethics. Think about that. Whether or not you keep promises tells a lot about you. I found, well, it's a while already. One of our daughters got married, and the responses they got back said there'd be a certain number of people, so they were setting up extra seats and stuff for all these people. And there was at least 50 or more who didn't show. What I see happening is that there's something more exciting, even though you made that commitment, there's something more exciting, and something comes up you'd rather do. You need to watch that. And we need to encourage young people as well. No, you said you would be there. You need to keep your promise. Maybe we need to watch what we say to children, too. When we were in Minnesota, if we heard we might go to Wisconsin, we got all excited. So if Dad said, you know, we ought to go to Wisconsin again and visit your relatives, that meant all the dozens and dozens of cousins we had, and got excited about it. You know what happens to a young brain when you hear that? We're going to Wisconsin. Or maybe we need to be careful how we word things. And so, we're making plans. Mom and I are going to talk about this. We'll get back to you. But be careful. Promises are to be kept as much as lieth in us. Now, we understand there are times you understand. That's not what we're talking about. Now, I want to notice especially 42 is a beautiful verse to end all this on. Except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely thou hadst sent me away now empty. God hath seen mine affliction and the labor of my hands, and rebuked thee yesterday. Yes, that's it. There may be times when you think you're getting taken advantage of, but hold on to your integrity. Don't let go of it. Stay with it. God will. I try to do it my way. It will fail. And the man or woman who lives an undisciplined life of integrity or deception loses. I think I could slip another story in there. I was with my cousin. We were downtown shopping. I'm not sure what all we were doing, but I know we ended up at the electronics place. Now, electronics store 50 over 50 years ago didn't look like electronic places today. Let's see, 8-track players, speakers, record player, that type of thing. But he went in, and I'm pretty sure what he wanted was some speakers or an 8-track player maybe for his car. He had been in there the day before, and he saw the price. That's what I figured out later. And the day I was with him, before we went in, he pulls out his wallet, starts pulling money out and sticking it in the glove compartment. He walks in the store, and he said, I'd really like to have that 8-track player there. It up and says that'll be better. He gets his wallet. That's all I have. Would you take that? Paul said, yeah, that's all. That's all you have on. Is that true or false? Well, it's all he had on him. Now, I was too young at the time, but I would have had a lot of fun with that. Been topless. So I passed that on if it ever happens to you. I would have said, oh, well, you just pulled a bunch of money out in your car. Here's 10 bucks. You can pay me back when you get out. But that's the last time you invite me along to go shopping. I don't know. But really, that's the type of thing we should be doing. Calling people, you don't. I don't say do things on purpose to make them look foolish, but when there's that kind of deception. By the way, that man is a messed up man. Let's go to the third one. Spend a little bit of time on this, and this is Joseph's life. The discipline life of integrity. The first one is kind of a negative approach. Second main point. Now, the third main point is more of a positive, well, much more of a positive approach. So when you think about integrity and finances, what Joseph said there, and you remember what he told Potiphar, he said, well, there's going to be 7 good years, so save it up. Save it up, set it aside. There's going to be 7 lean years, and it'll get used up. And we find out that it wasn't just for them, it was for others coming in. So he was wise in what he did. And as I think about integrity in finances, how are we with that? We are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hid. Neither do men light a candle and put it under a bushel, but on a candlestick. And it giveth light unto all that are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your discipline of integrity and glorify your Father. Thank you for your word. We thank you as we look into your word that we can see examples of those who have failed and those who have conquered. And I pray that we would be more than conquerors, that we would live in the fullness of life that you have available to us as your people. Thank you that you have put within us that spirit to warn us, to prompt us when it's time to flee, when our thoughts are going the wrong direction, when we haven't really told all of the truth, or we have not told the truth by saying nothing, whatever it might be, Father, I pray you continue to do that work in our hearts and our lives. Thank you for each one here, the willingness to spend this time to come out to hear the word. I pray that you would be their comfort and strength in this time going through the funeral, Brother John. Thank you for his life, his testimony for you. Continue to bless and guide. You are so faithful. You are so good. In Jesus' name, we pray.